Thank you, Madam President, dear Roberta. Let me first congratulate you. Let me congratulate you from the bottom of my heart for your renomination. I think your success is a mirror for the outstanding work you've been doing in this House of Democracy. Honourable members, it is now 5 years since I first came to ask for your confidence. 5 years like no other in our union's history. I will always remember the spine-tingling moments we shared here together in this hemicycle. From standing, of course, in front of you asking for your confidence 5 years ago, to proposing Next Generation EU, I will never forget the appearance of President Zelensky at the beginning of the Russian war in Ukraine, when even the translators could not hold back their tears. I will never forget the empty chair poignantly left out for Alexei Navalny as his daughter spoke on his behalf, or the moments of silence for those who lost their life in the pandemic. But also the moments of song for the Ode of Joy or Auld Lang Syne. And I will never forget the last words of David Sassoli calling for a new and united Europe. Honourable members, choices are the hinges of destiny. And in a world full of adversity, Europe's destiny hinges on what we do next. Despite the momentous things we have done and overcome, Europe now faces a clear choice, a choice which will shape our work for the next five years, but it will also define our place in the world for the next 50. The choice comes down to whether we will be shaped by events and the world around us, or whether we will come together and build our future for ourselves. And that choice is ours. Europe cannot control dictators and demagogues across the world, but it can choose to protect its own democracy. Europe cannot determine elections across the world, but it can choose to invest in the security and defense of this continent. Europe cannot stop change, but it can choose to embrace it and invest in a new age of prosperity and improving our quality of life. But, honorable members, for us to choose the Europe of tomorrow, we must acknowledge how people feel today. We are in a period of deep anxiety and uncertainty for Europeans. Families are feeling the pain from the cost of living and housing. Young people are concerned about the planet, their future, and the prospect of war. Companies and farmers are feeling squeezed. And all of this is a symptom of a world in which everything is weaponized and contested, where there is a clear attempt to divide and polarize our societies. I am deeply concerned about these trends. But I'm convinced that Europe, a strong Europe, can rise to the challenge. And this is why I'm asking you for your confidence today, because like you, I came into politics to make a difference for all of society, to deliver for the generation of my children and grandchildren, like those who came before us did. And I am convinced that the version of Europe since the end of World War II, with all its imperfection and its inequalities, is still the best version in history. And I will never stand by and watch it be torn apart from the inside or from the outside. I will never let the extreme polarization of our societies become accepted. I will never accept that demagogues and extremists destroy our European way of life. And I stand here today ready to lead the fight with all the democratic forces in this House. And this is the vision I have set out in my political guidelines. A vision of a stronger Europe that delivers prosperity, that protects people, and that defends democracy. A stronger Europe that delivers social fairness and supports people. A stronger Europe that implements what it agrees in a fair way and that sticks to the targets of the European Green Deal with pragmatism, technology neutrality, and innovation. I have listened carefully to the democratic forces in this Parliament, and I am convinced that these guidelines reflect how much we have in common despite the differences that are healthy in any democracy. So, honorable members, our first priority will be prosperity and competitiveness. In the last 5 years, we have weathered the fiercest storm in our union's economic history. We have emerged stronger from the shock of lockdowns, and we have overcome an unprecedented energy crisis. We did this together, and I believe we can be proud of it. But we also know that our competitiveness needs a major boost. The fundamentals of the global economy are changing. Those who stand still will fall behind. Those who are not competitive will be dependent. So the race is on, and I want Europe to switch gear. And this starts with making business easier and faster. We need to deepen our single market across the board. We need less reporting, less bureaucracy, more trust, better enforcement, more faster permitting. And I will ensure that we are accountable for this, because only what gets measured gets done. And therefore, I will task each commissioner to deep dive in their portfolio and to deliver concretely on burden reduction. And I will appoint a vice president to coordinate this work and to report on progress to this House once a year. I will introduce a revamped SME and competitiveness check as part of our better regulation toolbox. We all know that there is no Europe without small and medium enterprises. They are the heart of our economy. And therefore, let's get rid of burdensome micromanagement. Let's give them more trust, better incentives. Our SMEs deserve it. Honourable members, prosperity and competitiveness. Let me give you some figures. In the first half of this year, 50% of our electricity generation came from renewables, homegrown and clean. Investments in clean technologies in Europe have more than tripled in this mandate. We attract more investments in clean hydrogen than the United States and China combined. In the last years, we have concluded with global partners 35 new agreements on clean tech, hydrogen, and critical raw materials. This is the European Green Deal in action. So I want to be clear. We will stay the course on our growth strategy and the goals that were set for 2030 and 2050. Our focus will now be on implementation and investment to make it happen on the ground. And this is why I will put forward a new clean industrial deal in the first 100 days of the next mandate. It will channel investment in infrastructure and industry, in particular for energy-intensive sectors. This will help create lead markets in everything from clean steel to clean tech. It will speed up planning, tendering, and permitting. We must be faster and simpler. Because Europe is decarbonizing and industrializing at the same time. So our companies need predictability for their investments and their innovation. And yes, they can rely on us. And in this logic, we will enshrine our 90% target for 2040 in our European climate law. Our companies need to plan their investment for the coming decade already today. But this is not only for business. It's also for business, but not only for business. For our young people, the children, the teenager of today, 2030, 2040, 2050 is just around the corner. They know that we have to reconcile climate protection and a prosperous economy. And they would never forgive us if we do not rise to the challenge. So this is not only a matter of competitiveness, but, honorable members, this is also a matter of intergenerational fairness. The young people deserve that we act on this one. The new Clean Industrial Deal will also help bring down energy bills. We all know that structurally high energy prices hamper our competitiveness. And high energy bills are a major driver of energy poverty of people. I have not forgotten how Putin blackmailed us by cutting us off Russian fossil fuels. But we withstood together. We invested massively in homegrown, cheap renewables. And this enabled us to break free from dirty Russian fossil fuels. Therefore, honorable members, together we will ensure that the era of dependency from Russian fossil fuels is over once and for all. Honourable members, Europe needs more investment, be it farming or industry, digital or strategic technologies, but also more investment in people and their skills. This mandate has to be the time of investment. And this starts with completing our capital markets union and mobilizing more private funding. Every year, 300 billion euros of European family savings go from Europe to foreign markets because our capital markets are too fragmented. And then this money is often used to buy innovative European companies from abroad, and the companies leave. This has to change. We need to leverage this enormous wealth to create growth here in Europe. And this is why we will propose a European Savings and Investments Union. European startups should not need to look at the United States or Asia to finance their expansion. They must find what they need to grow right here in Europe. So we need a deep and liquid capital market, and we need a competition policy that supports companies to scale up. Europe must be again the home of opportunity and of innovation. And honourable members, to unleash private investment, we also need public funding. Yes, we have the resources of Next Generation EU and the current budget, but this will come to an end within the next years, while our investment needs will not. Our new budget will be reinforced. We need more investment capacity. It must be more focused on policy, simpler for member states, and more impactful, so that we can use its power to leverage more private and public financing. And I will propose a new European Competitiveness Fund. It will be focused on common and cross-border European projects that will drive competitiveness and innovation, notably to support the Clean Industrial Deal. It will ensure that we develop strategic tech and manufacture right here in Europe, be it AI or clean tech. The future of our prosperity must be made in Europe. That is clear, and this is something we really have to press on, honourable members. Honourable members, we must also invest more in our security and defence. Russia is still on the offensive in eastern Ukraine. They are banking on a war of attrition, on making the next winter even harsher than the last. Russia is banking on Europe and the West going soft. And some in Europe are playing along. 2 weeks ago, a European Union prime minister went to Moscow. This so-called peace mission was nothing but an appeasement mission. This was a plain appeasement mission. Only 2 days later, Putin's jets aimed their missiles at a children's hospital and maternity ward in Kyiv. And we all saw the images of children covered with blood. We saw the mothers trying to bring young cancer patients to safety. That strike was not a mistake. It was a message, a chilling message from the Kremlin to all of us. So, honourable members, our answer has to be just as clear. No one wants peace more than the people of Ukraine, a just and lasting peace for a free and independent country. And Europe will stand with Ukraine for as long as it takes. This is our message. Mesdames et messieurs les députés,
honorable members, we must give Ukraine everything it needs to resist and emerge victorious. This means that in our future, for the very first time, our liberty is at stake. We are responsible to, and we must do everything we can to protect European citizens. To protect Europe is our duty. And so I do believe it is now time to build a veritable union of defence. I do know that some may not feel at ease and comfortable with this idea, but the people who should be feeling uncomfortable are those bringing threats to our security. remains the pillar of our collective defense architecture. But we all know that spending on defense is too low and ineffective. We're too dependent on foreign powers, so we need to build a single market for defense. We need to invest more in high-level capacity building, and this means that Europe needs to move forward along the Versailles Declaration pathway. We need to invest more, and we need to invest together. We must build common European projects, for example, a complete air defense system, an air shield. Not only to protect our airspace, but also to send a clear and strong signal of unity, a European unity in the field of defense.
Honorable members, security is not only about external threats. Cyber and hybrid threats are growing. Organized criminal networks are infiltrating our economy. Most of them use corruption. They are causing fear and innocent people's death with their brutal violence. They earn enormous amounts of money from drug trafficking, ransomware, fraud, trafficking in human beings, and they are not limited by national borders. So it's necessary that we respond to this growing threat on a European level. We must make sure that police can work across Europe without borders. That is why I will propose to double Europol's staff and strengthen its mandate. I want Europol to become a truly operational police agency. And we must also do more to secure our external borders. Our eastern border in particular has become a target for hybrid attacks and provocations. Russia is luring migrants from Yemen up north, exploiting their misery and pushing them deliberately against the Finnish border. We should always keep in mind a member state's border is a European border. And we will do everything we can to make them stronger. And this is part of the reason why we must strengthen Frontex, to make it more effective while fully respecting fundamental rights. I will propose to triple the number of European border and coast guards to 30,000. More secure borders will also help us to manage migration in a more structured and fair way. The Migration and Asylum Pact is a huge step forward. We put solidarity at the heart of our common response. Migration challenges need a European response with a fair and firm approach based on our values. Always remembering that migrants are human beings like you and me and all of us. We are protected by human rights. I know that many pessimists thought that migration was too divisive to agree on, but we proved them wrong. Together we made it. And we have emerged stronger from it. Now we must collectively focus on implementation and support member states in making it a reality on the ground. And there will be more to do. We need a common approach on returns to make them more effective and dignified. And we need to develop our comprehensive partnerships, in particular across our southern neighborhood. The Mediterranean region should get undivided attention. And this is why I will appoint a commissioner for the region and propose a new agenda for the Mediterranean together with Kaya Kallas, because the future of those two Mediterranean shores is one and the same. Honourable members, our neighbourhood is home to our future too. Inviting countries into our union is a moral, a historical, and a political responsibility. It is an enormous geostrategic responsibility for Europe. Because in today's world, a larger union will be a stronger union. It will strengthen our voice in the world. It will help reduce our dependencies. And it will ensure that democracy, prosperity, and stability spread across Europe. We will support candidates by working on investment and reform and integrating them where we can into our legal framework. Accession will always be a merits-based process. And we will ensure that all countries are ready before joining. But completing our union is also in our own core interest. And it will be a core priority for my commission. I'm deeply convinced history is calling again. The Western Balkans, Ukraine, Moldova and Georgia have made their free choice. They have chosen freedom over oppression. They have chosen democracy over dependency. And some of them are paying a very high price for this choice. So we must do our choice too and show steadfast commitment that their future will be free, will be prosperous, and will be in our European Union. Honourable members, Europe has a responsibility to play an active role in the world, starting in our neighbourhood, and in particular in the Middle East. I want to be very clear. The bloodshed in Gaza must stop now. Too many children, women, and civilians have lost their lives as a result of Israel's response to Hamas' brutal terror. The people of Gaza cannot bear any more, and humanity cannot bear any more. We need an immediate and enduring ceasefire. We need the release of Israeli hostages, and we need to prepare for the day after. Europe must play its part. We have massively increased our humanitarian aid to almost 200 million euro in 2024, and we will do more. We are now working on a much larger multi-year package to support an effective Palestinian Authority. The two-state solution is the best way to ensure security for both, to Israelis and Palestinians. People in the Middle East deserve peace, security, and prosperity, and Europe will stand by their side. Meine Damen und Herren Abgeordnete.
Honourable members. Europe offers a unique quality of life when it comes to social security, to highest quality foodstuffs. Vineyards, rapeseed oil fields, orchards, fruit orchards, all of this means we enjoy a good quality of life, but we also get a sense of being at home. And that's why the future of our countryside is such a sensitive and important topic for Europe. We need to overcome contradictions and together look for sound solutions. And that is why the strategic dialogue on the future of farming has begun. This will bring together farmers, environmental groups, and experts from right through the food production chain around one table, and I've promised to listen carefully and to draw important lessons. That is exactly what I will do. I will take on board good recommendations and put together a new strategy for the food and farming sector. I commit to ensuring that farmers across Europe will have a fair income.
Niemand sollte
Nobody should be forced to sell high-quality foodstuffs at below production costs.
Wir müssen die Position und
We must strengthen the position of farmers in their position in the food chain. They need to have access to more capital. Anyone who uses sustainable methods to protect the environment and ecosystems needs to be compensated adequately for that service.
Und unsere Landwirtinnen und Landwirte.
Our farmers shape the landscape. They shape Europe. And they are part and parcel of our culture. They ensure food security. And that is why we are so proud of them. That is why together we need to tackle the problems that weigh on their shoulders, climate change, water shortages, which increase year on year. If we look at this catastrophic impact on forests and rural areas, we're seeing the face of our rural environment changing. We must do more so that together with farmers, we can prepare for what is coming our way as a result of climate change. That is why I will put forward a plan to help us to tackle the adaptation to climate change. And in parallel to this, I want to draw up a strategy on how we manage the precious water resources that we have. It's the key to competitiveness. It's a key that we must focus on and tackle.
Honourable members, our quality of life and our very social fabric are unique. We made historic steps forward on our pillar of social rights, with minimum wages, to the first ever child guarantee, just to name a few. During the pandemic, we saved 40 million jobs with SURE, and we can be very proud of it. But many new challenges have emerged, from the impact of AI to mental health at work and new drivers of poverty. So we need a new action plan for the implementation of the pillar. We must ensure fair transitions and good working conditions for workers and self-employed people. And crucial for that is social dialogue, the hallmark of our social market economy. We will therefore work to increase collective bargaining and strengthen the European dialogue, and we will address those issues that Europeans feel the most in their daily lives. Take housing. Europe faces a housing crisis, with people of all age and families of all size affected. Prices and rents are soaring. People are struggling to find affordable homes. This is why, for the first time, I will appoint a commissioner with a direct responsibility for the topic of housing. We will develop a European affordable housing plan to look at all the drivers of the crisis and to help unlock private and public investment needed. Typically, housing is not seen as a European issue. Some might say we should not get involved. But I want this commission to support people where it matters most, and if it matters to Europeans, then it matters to Europe. Honourable Member, this is how we can strengthen our society. This means ensuring that every region in every part of Europe is supported. No one is left behind. I am committed to a strong cohesion policy designed together with regions and local authorities. I want Europe to be the best place to grow up in and the best place to grow old in. We must enable young people to make the most of Europe's freedom, from a stronger Erasmus Plus to more citizens' engagement. But we must also protect young people. Childhood and teenage years are the time when our character is formed, our personality develops, our brain is shaped by triggers and emotions. So this is an amazing time of development, but also a time of real vulnerability. And we see more and more reporting on what some call a mental health crisis. I believe that social media and excessive screen time and addictive practices have played their part. And I must tell you, my heart bleeds when I read about young people harming themselves or even taking their lives because of online abuse. I think of those last moments and the pain they must have felt. I think of their parents and their friends, and this is devastating. So, honorable members, we can never accept this in our society. We will tackle the plague of cyberbullying. We will take action against addictive design of some platforms. And we will convene the first ever European-wide inquiry on the impact of social media on the well-being of young people. We owe it to them, and we will not rest until we've done right to them. And honourable members, one of the most fundamental choices we face is exactly what kind of societies we want for our children and grandchildren, and in particular, for our daughters and granddaughters. On women's rights, we have achieved together the unthinkable, thanks to the amazing solidarity in this house of European democracy across all party lines. After 10 years of struggle, we have unblocked the Women on Boards Directive. We have achieved huge progress on pay transparency. And let me tell you, there's not the slightest argument and reason why women should get paid less for the same work than men. But there's still so much to do. Stop the rise in violence against women. Reconcile care and career, actually not only for women, but women are mostly affected. Close the pay and pensions gap, because it is no coincidence that poverty in old age has a female face. And there's so much more to do. So let's work together to develop a roadmap for women's rights. Let's keep moving forward. If not now, when then? Mesdames et Messieurs les députés,
honourable members, democracy is a shared treasure. It is the frame within which all our differences and diversity can express itself. And that frame is fragile as it is precious. For too long, we took it for granted. we got comfortable in our democracy. But today, our democracies are threatened. We've seen a ground war in Ukraine for over 2 years now. And across the Union and within our institutions, our services and journalists, and I wish to thank them for their work today, are uncovering cyber attacks, espionage, corruption, disinformation campaigns carried out by foreign actors, specifically Chinese and Russian actors. Never in the recent decades have we seen as high a level of hybrid attacks and cyber attacks. Within the European Commission, we are fully aware of this situation and are acting in a responsible way for several years now. A huge work of analysis being carried out, and we have established effective tools together with the member states. But we must go further. We must stop hostile foreign actors from interfering in our democratic processes, to undermine them from within in order to destroy them. And in order to do this, we must take strong and decisive measures within Europe. If you place your trust in me today, the Commission will propose a European democracy shield.
L'Union a besoin de sa propre structure.
The Union needs its own structures to fight manipulation of information and foreign interference. This structure will bring together expertise and tie in with national competence and intelligence. The intelligence and action capacities need to be strengthened, as also the sanctions must be strengthened. The shield will take into account recommendations coming from the Special Committee on Foreign Interference. It's crucial that we give the European Union the tools that can fight cyber attacks, that we can impose transparency. We have to have transparency of foreign funding and a reliable framework for the provision of information. And in order to do this, we must support independent journalism.
L'Union doit continuer.
The Union must continue to respect, ensure that we respect the rules of the digital world and continue to support media literacy programs. We can have a more lively democracy, a participative democracy that is alive. And I know I can count on your support to make this grand plan for the defense of European democracy come to life.
But we will also step up our work on defending all parts of our democracy. We will protect free media and civil society. The rule of law and the fight against corruption will be at the heart of our work. We will strengthen all tools and we will step up our enforcement. We will ensure rule of law reports, that they focus on the single market dimension to help protect companies. And we will keep a very clear principle in our budget. Respecting the rule of law is a must for EU funds in this budget and in future. And, honourable members, progress is a constant work we have to do. We need an ambitious reform agenda to ensure the functioning of a larger union and to increase democratic legitimacy. While reforms were necessary before, with enlargements, they become indispensable. So we must use this as a catalyst for change in terms of our capacity to act, our policies and our budget. And we will, of course, focus on what we can already do, and this is a lot, but we should be more ambitious. I believe we need treaty change where it can improve our union. And I want to work on that with this House, and this will be part of a closer partnership between the Commission and the Parliament. I have listened to your demands and concerns. I continue to support your right of initiative, and we will increase our cooperation on Article 225 resolutions to ensure we will follow up. We need to revise the framework agreement to ensure more transparency, more accountability, more presence in the Parliament. When all institutions work together and move together, Europe moves forward. Honourable members, to finish, at the start of this second mandate, his second mandate, Jacques Delors said,
Our community is not merely the fruit of history and necessity, but also of will.
The choice that we face. History is keeping knocking at our doors. The need for Europe will be stronger than ever. Our determination has to match. That is what has brought our continent together. Not the inscrutable forces of fate, but the power of people striving for more. Like the three prisoners on Ventotene Island in the 40s, who laid out a vision of a united continent. And like the post-war generation who built peace on coal and steel, people stood unarmed in the face of Soviet tanks, who put carnation into rifles and tore down a wall with their bare hands. People who still risk their life today for this dream called Europe. Generation after generation have made Europe, have chosen a strong Europe. And now that responsibility is up on us. The last 5 years, we have shown what we can do when we work together. So let's do it again. Let us make the choice of strength. Let us make the choice of leadership. Let us make the choice of Europe. Thank you very much, and long live Europe.
Thank you.